This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football. Episode number 64, et tu, recorded March 15th, 2017.
Hey guys, what's going on? Welcome back to the Gridiron Graduates. Bill Rossetti hitting you guys up here in snowy Pennsylvania. We got, you know, just a tad bit of snow here over the last couple days, but we're doing well. And, you know, glad to have you back as always. Ian Wharton, of course, joining me. What's going on, man? I'm guessing you didn't get much snow down your way.
Oh, no. Nope, not at all. We we don't get any down here. Sometimes there's like a freezing rain, but no. It's actually really nice out here. It's like 55-ish, so it's pretty nice.
Yeah, might want to send some of that weather up our way. Yeah, up here we got probably around 2 feet of snow, so
yeah, stay safe, everybody.
Yeah, it's it was fun, to say the least, to dig cars out, and you know, the plows are still out there trying to clear the streets, so it'll be a while for sure. So, but at least spring's right around the corner, so just think warm thoughts, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. Once it's April, it's a little bit easier, but yeah, I mean, I remember being in Ohio, we always got like that one March or April snowstorm, so, you know, it's hopefully that last push, and then it'll be nice out.
So let's jump right into it here. You know, obviously, we're a week into NFL free agency, and certainly it's been very hectic. But of course, being the middle of March, it is also March Madness. You know, the NCAA tournament's underway. Got the first four going on. I'll give myself a little pat on the back. I did get all 68 teams this year. I did finish top 25 in the bracket matrix, so pretty happy about that.
Congrats. I think Lenardi only had – I think Lenardi missed one, didn't he?
Lenardi missed one. Yep, he had Syracuse in because he was very adamant that those six top 50 wins were going to put Syracuse in, but – I thought even with that, I just thought the low RPI would be just too much for them to overcome, and sure enough, they were one of the first four out.
Nice.
Yeah. So when I saw, like, essentially when I saw what the first four matchups were, I knew I had it in the bag. I mean, a lot of people did go 68, so it was real nice, but, you know, definitely very happy with my performance. Best performance I've ever had with all the teams I seeded right. You know, I only missed four by more than one seed line, and part of that was because the committee completely botched Wichita State. There's no reason they should be a 10 seed, but you know, it sets up for some good matchups. We potentially have them in Kentucky in the second round, so I'm looking forward. I don't know if you filled out a bracket. Of course, I already have mine done.
I have not. I figured we'd you know, I'd talk to you first, actually. I've watched probably a total of 5 games this season, so, which is actually more than I probably watched last year. So, it's just one of those things, man, like, you only have so much time, and
absolutely, yeah.
You know, I tend to watch NBA games over college, and but I do watch this time of year, so I'm pretty excited. I'm actually going to have the games on at work the next couple of days, and we're just going to listen to them in the background, so. Yeah, I'm excited for it, but definitely want more of an expert's take before I attack the bracket.
And I mean, you know, as exciting as like the end of the tournament is, like the Final Four and the National Championship, these first 2 days, the Thursday and Friday, are really one of the most exciting days of basketball. Cause, I mean, you have 32 tournament games over two days. Yeah, there's nothing like it. It's so exciting. 16 games across 4 channels all day. You know, what more can you ask for? So it's an exciting time. But so we figured bring a little March Madness over to the NFL side. You know, so we're gonna kind of take some of the teams and kind of go over who's been doing well in free agency and kind of match it up in a little bit of a bracket. Now we're gonna make it a little exciting. We're not going to put New England in because everyone and their mother knows so far that New England has done the mess. I mean, we could touch on them real quick, but you know, if they were in this bracket, they easily win it. I mean, you know, Stephon Gilmore, they lock up. They just re-signed Dante Hightower. They signed Rex Burkhead, which I think is an underrated signing. You know, they're just, you know, they acquired Brady Cooks through trade.
Yeah, that was a really big one. It's hard to argue them as the winner. You know, they got Coney Ealy for basically free.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, yeah, I mean, that was just a crazy, crazy offseason from them. And actually, it's what makes me think that maybe this is, could possibly be Tom Brady's last hurrah. Because, I mean, this was, they've been aggressive in the past for, through free agency. I mean, Darrell Revis and guys like that. But this year was just an extreme version
mm-hmm.
of that. So, I mean, considering that, you know, I don't know, man. I tend to think once Tom goes, Bill goes too, and maybe they're just stocking the cupboard for Jimmy G and Josh McDaniels to take over. But I don't know. This is my conspiracy theory. I mean, I've got nothing on that points to that being true, but I mean, part of me is just like, huh, that's maybe possible.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, this is definitely more aggressive than we've ever seen the Patriots, so it should be interesting. So that's why we're not going to include them in this bracket. What we are going to do is we're going to take who we felt are probably the next five best, because we figure Cleveland, Jacksonville, and San Francisco are arguably the next three. So we've seeded them 1, 2, 3, and I got a couple responses with Philly and Tampa. So we'll touch on that first, make it kind of like a play-in game. You know, this is essentially our game in Dayton to see who advances into the main bracket. So we'll start there. Philly, of course, made the big splash, signing Alshon Jeffrey. Also picked up Torrey Smith and Chance Warmack. So those are probably the three biggest signings they've had so far in free agency. They re-signed Stefan Wisniewski, who, of course, is one of the more underrated offensive linemen. And then the best signing of all in many people's minds is re-signing Nick Foles.
Mm.
Yeah, I know. Hashtag.
Wow.
You know, sorry, not sorry. But that's pretty much the gist of what Philly did. Tampa, of course, picks up a former Eagle in DeSean Jackson. They bring in Chris Baker, J.J. Wilcox, among others. So looking here between these two teams, what do you think here between Philly and Tampa?
Well, I mean, I like both of these teams as off seasons as well. I mean, I think you could make a pretty strong argument for both. For me, I mean, I'll start with Philly. Obviously, their goal had to be maybe even just number one priority is improve Carson Wentz's chances of having a successful sophomore season. And obviously, we know about the offensive line being banged up, having some injuries. We know about, you know, the wide receivers just being really poor. Maybe that's just even putting it nicely. But you know, I look at them, I say I like that they got two receivers, Torrey Smith, Alshon Jeffrey. I'm really surprised that Jeffrey was a one-year deal. Like, I think that's a good thing for the team. I mean, obviously, the less money that you can commit to anybody is a good thing. It's really surprising. So, you know, I look at that and then I say, okay. I also like the Torrey Smith signing. I'm not quite as excited about that one. Just because I'm not sure what he has left, and that's not his fault.
Mm-hmm.
Really, that's more of a byproduct of exactly what happened in San Francisco. It wasn't his fault that they couldn't really show exactly what they had as far as the playmakers there. It wasn't always on just one person. It was just the total situation just wasn't great. So I do like it, though. It's a good price. $5 million a year is dirt cheap for the NFL, and I, you know, maybe they'll add someone else in the draft, but not, you know, putting all of their guys down one peg from the roster last year should help them as well. Nelson Agholor more as like a slot. Jordan Matthews, obviously being a third or fourth receiver, should be much better. So, you know, if they can stay healthy, you know, I like their offseason. I really like the Stefan Wisniewski signing. he's a guy that I'm surprised that the NFL, he's kind of bounced around a lot, and I'm not sure. Everyone that you talk to, whether it be like PFF guys or, you know, our guys at BR, or just independent film guys, we all like him. Like, everyone likes this guy. Everyone thinks he's a good player, whether at guard or at center. And so I think he was a really solid signing, especially for that value. Chance Warmack was a nice signing too. I mean, he's been a free agent bust in part because of injuries, but I mean, 1 year, $1.5 million, it's basically nothing. So they had a strong, I think that's a strong free agency. Compared to Tampa, I think I like Tampa's a little more, in a different sense though. I mean, it's kind of hard to compare. I mean, you lost Vincent Jackson, and I know he's older. Maybe they bring him back, but they lost him. They lost Daryl Smith, who, again, older linebacker, but he was an asset. Alteron Werner, he didn't play a ton last year, but he's a nice player. Surprised he actually hasn't been picked up elsewhere. And then Bradley McDougal, he's been actually overtaken in that lineup by a couple of their backups. Both their safeties, actually. Keith Tandy had a surprisingly good season last year, and he kind of took over that starting job for him. But DeSean Jackson, obviously, is going to be the headliner, and Chris Baker as well. Those are really two high-impact players. Surprised that they got Baker at such a low price, 3 years, $15 million. That's a great price for him. He's a big-time playmaker, and he was for Washington. They stole a couple Washington guys. Then the only other external free agent that they got was J.J. Wilcox, and he'll play in their three safety sets. And, you know, if you're just going to compare him to McDougald, I'm not sure if he's an upgrade. I don't think he's a downgrade either, but I'm not sure that they made a major move with that. So you're basically looking at these and you're saying, well, both teams had two major acquisitions, and then you had, and I would consider Jeffrey and Wisniewski. I think Wisniewski is a bigger acquisition than Torrey Smith. And definitely Foles. I mean, Foles is obviously a backup, so hopefully they're not going to have to see him hit the field. And then obviously for Tampa Bay, it's going to be DeSean and Chris Baker. So I like DeSean and Chris Baker pair a little bit more. So I'm going to go with Tampa. You could talk me into Philly, but I just think DeSean's a little bit better than Alshon, and especially for Jameis, he should help. And then Chris Baker, you know, long term, it's not a great signing, maybe, because he's already 29, going to be 30, but it was a short-term deal. So I think he'll have a really big impact right away, whereas I don't know if the impact for Torrey Smith and Wisniewski is going to be as noticeable for Philly.
Yeah, and I think the thing you could argue for Tampa, too, looking at both these classes, are Tampa's kind of worked on both sides of the ball, where Philly really has only focused on offense. Now, obviously, that's what Philly definitely needs to do. You know, they need to focus more on offense, but the defense can definitely use some pieces. You know, they cut Connor Barwin. You know, they gave Vinny Curry that big contract, and he kind of disappeared. They lost Benny Logan to Kansas City. So
I was surprised that they lost him too. 1 year, $8 million. It's not like he got much. I was a little bit surprised at that.
Yeah, so a bit of a shame there, because he was a real nice inside force for the Eagles. So, you know, definitely got to try to plug up that hole a little bit. So I think I'll agree with you and say Tampa Bay as well. You know, you bring in the headliner, like you said, is DeSean Jackson. I think he's going to be a real nice fit, you know, to give Jameis Winston that deep ball threat. And then you have Mike Evans to take care of everything else. So I think we'll go with Tampa there and move them into our main bracket here, where they'll match up with Cleveland. So we'll get to that matchup a little bit. We'll go to the other side now first, which will pit Jacksonville against San Francisco. Now, San Francisco, we know they're in a rebuilding mode. So a lot of these moves are going to take time, and that's, but it is, and like we talked about last week, it's all about getting talent. You know, you saw, like, guys with Pierre Garçon, Kyle Juszczyk was a real nice signing. They gave him a lot of money, but I think they're going to utilize him a lot. Malcolm Smith, they brought in from Oakland. Earl Mitchell, that was a good signing for the defensive line. It's really just about gobbling up talent, I think, as far as the 49ers go. And then you look at Jacksonville, and it just seems like every year all they're doing is just pumping money into that defense, and they're continuing to do that with AJ Boye, Calais Campbell, Barry Church, and then a couple other of low-key signings. You know, like Audie Cole, that linebacker, brought in Earl Watford on the offensive line. So, you know, a couple of strong classes here, but you know, the advantage for Jacksonville, obviously, is trying to pump all that money, like I said, into the defense. But boy, did they really come out big with, especially in the secondary, getting Boye and Church. You know, really, you could say they upgraded on all three, or at least two of the three levels, in on that defense. So, I don't know. It's close here.
Yeah, it's really close, and you kind of have to break it down into two as well here, because you got one that basically wanted to legitimize their roster, and that would be San Francisco. And it's hard to, if not even just, it may just be impossible to say it ain't different. You know, San Francisco just had one of the most talent-barren rosters as we've ever seen in the last 10 years. If not more. And so, you know, with that in mind, you know, they had to just become competent. Like, and I really like what they've done. And they still have $82 million after all this spending. Like, people act like they balled out. And they did ball out. But they still have a bunch more that they can do in the future. They're going to use this number two pick in the draft, and they're going to be a roster that's going to be, you know, at least pretty competitive, I think, depending on the quarterback play. And I'm with you. I mean, I like the San Francisco offseason. I think that the Garcon deal is creative, but it's smart. Malcolm Smith's not a good player, but they're going to be able to get out of that easily. And again, it was about really just finding a body that can be out there and just not be horrible. And he's not horrible. He's just not, like, good long-term starter. So that's okay. Kyle Jesisnik, that was a tremendous pickup. I really love that pickup. People laughed at the money, but he's a darn good player. Yep. Same for Earl Mitchell, you know, short-term deal as far as guaranteed. He's going to be a nice rotational piece. Marquise Goodwin, he's going to be really fun. He might be a steal at that price. Aldrick Robinson, too, I didn't see that they had signed him, but he'll be like a Taylor Gabriel for them. So this is a good, I mean, this is a good offseason. You know, they got rid of some really bad players. It really depends on what they do at quarterback. I wouldn't have minded if they brought back Colin Kaepernick for 1 year. Obviously, it doesn't seem like they want to go that direction, and that's fair. But I really like what Jacksonville's done, too. Jacksonville added three studs, you know, two stars and a stud. And so I'm going to give this one to Jacksonville personally. AJ Bouye was, you know, my number two corner on the market up until Jermaine Johnson received the franchise tag. They gave him a ton of money, but deservedly so. You know, I'm actually okay with them paying him this much, 5 years, $68 million almost. And he's a star. You know, he's a star at the position. He should develop nicely into a very high-end number two, if not a capable mid-tier number one corner. And along with Jalen Ramsey, that's going to be really fun. As you mentioned, Calais Campbell, he's 30 years old, and it's a four-year deal, and they guaranteed two years of that contract. But they needed some veteran leadership, and they actually released three defensive ends / defensive tackles with that signing. And so that's going to hurt their depth a little bit, but you know, some of the other guys were banged up and were a little bit unreliable too. So I'm not criticizing that. You know, they got the star. And then Barry Church, I thought, was a huge upgrade over Jonathan Cyprian. So I really like that contract, too. So I'm going to go with the Jaguars just because I think they got the higher-end talent. They didn't necessarily need the volume of talent. They just needed the impact guys, and they were able to get that.
And I think it's a matter of the Jaguars are trying to be in a more win-now mode as they've been in the last few years. You know, they're trying to do whatever it takes to finally bring it all together. And a lot of these signings, I think, kind of reflect that. Whereas San Francisco, it's kind of like you mentioned, they want to put like a productive product on the field, but they know that this is going to take multiple years to bring it all together. This isn't a one or two year project. This is a 3, 4, 5 year deal. That's why Shanahan and Lynch both got 6-year deals because they know it's going to be a while. So I think I'm going to go with Jacksonville here as well. Like you said, the Boye and Church signings really are going to improve that secondary to go with Jalen Ramsey and you know, Campbell and all those other solid defensive players they have on that line. You hope it's finally going to come together. We'll see come September if it plays out on the field, but right now I think Jags are looking pretty good, so we'll move Jacksonville on. But you know, again, nothing against San Francisco. I think they're definitely starting to build well toward the future, but Jacksonville gets the slight edge here, I think. So that brings us to the other semifinal, so we'll bring Tampa Bay back into the mix and pair them with Cleveland, who of course have had a very eventful free agency so far. You know, the big news, of course, well, one of the bigger stories, which was certainly really shocking, was the trade for Brock Osweiler, which has nothing to do with them acquiring Brock Osweiler. It's all about them essentially buying that second round pick because of all the salary space they had. But some of the big free agents, they bring in Kenny Britt, which likely means Terrell Pryor's gone, which, you know, I know certainly is confusing a lot of people, but, you know, we'll see how it plays out. But I really like what they did on the offensive line, bringing in Kevin Zeitler, bringing in J.C. Treader, locking up Joel Bitonio long term. Now all of a sudden you've got a really good offensive line for whoever ends up playing quarterback, whether it's, you know, Mitchell Trubisky or Deshaun Kaiser, whoever it is. So just with that, I think the Browns have done pretty darn well for themselves so far. So looking at them versus Tampa Bay, what are we seeing here?
Well, you know, I'm with you here on Cleveland's real quick. You know, I love the trade, absolutely love the trade for Brock Osweiler to get that second-round pick. You might as well spend that money while you have it. And even if they just have to cut him, which I kind of like the idea of using him as the veteran on the roster, using him as a backup. I mean, you're going to pay him anyway. I really don't seem to harm. And this is a team that's gone through 83 quarterbacks every year anyways. You know, like, who knows? Maybe I'm not saying he becomes even an average quarterback, Osweiler, but maybe he becomes like a semi-competent backup. And, you know, they have Cody Kessler, and I think that they view him as the future backup. But who knows? Maybe you keep Osweiler, and once his expired or guaranteed money runs out, maybe sometime next offseason, instead of just cutting him, you can trade him again. You know, I think there's worse things that could happen. So we'll see if they keep him. Yeah, I can see it either way. I think there's an argument either way there. Even if they don't, though, and they get that second-round pick, I still think that's a heck of a trade for them to be able to collect those assets. And I like the rest of their moves this offseason. I think they had a really strong couple of signings to beef up that offensive line with Zeitler and Treader. Those are really good linemen. And now the right tackle position, either Sean Coleman or Cam Irving are going to be able to battle it out at right tackle. And whoever, you know, honestly, it doesn't matter. I don't think who starts there, because worst comes worst, you chip that edge rusher off the right side with a tight end or with a running back or fullback. And if they really are that bad, then you just give it to them every play. And you know what? You're going to have four elite to very good linemen, and probably elite. I'd say four elite. I mean, I think this is a fantastic line. So, really impressive. I hope that they can get their quarterback, and I know that they'll get their quarterback in the draft. That 12 pick, they're either going to move up or they're just going to be able to sit tight and take their guy there. And it's going to be a really fun offense, I think, next year. Kenny Britt was an interesting addition. I like Kenny Britt. There's some off field stuff with him though. I really wish they would have kept Terrell Pryor over Kenny Britt. I don't think that was fully the Browns' fault. Actually, I think that was more of the fault of Drew Rosenhaus, his agent, actually, more than Pryor's fault and more than the Browns' fault. But it is what it is. Britt's talented. He's put up good numbers in bad situations. He just has to commit himself to being the best he can be and actually, kind of follow through on that. And really, though, the Browns didn't lose anything. I mean, Austin Pastazar is a nice backup. I'm sure someone will pick him up and be happy with the results, but they literally lost zero talent this offseason in a meaningful way. So I tend to lean towards the Browns. I really like what they did.
Yeah, and me, liking teams that build offensive lines, I can't ignore that. Yeah, what Tampa Bay did is nice, but boy, I'm still under the thought that if they do well enough this offseason, I think this Browns team can win 8 games, and I think they're really starting to move toward that. With Bitonio locking him up long term, he's quickly become one of the better guards in the league. You can kind of move him on either side. I'll be curious to see, where they place the two guys. Who goes to left guard, who goes to right guard? Because, but either way, I think, both Zeitler and Bitonio could probably play both sides. You've obviously got the Hall of Fame left tackle, and then Treader, of course, is going to be your center. So at least that kind of makes up for them losing Alex Mack last offseason. So big improvements there. We'll see if they start looking at defense, but we could pretty much assume at this point that they're going to take Myles Garrett with that first pick, and like you said, likely look quarterback with that 12th pick or maybe move up. So, and they still have a lot of cap room to play with as well. So we'll see if they do something with that second rounder they picked up from Houston. I don't expect them to make too big of a run at Jimmy Garoppolo. I know people want to say that because they got the second round pick, it gives them more ammo, but that's not what New England wants. New England has the leverage here, and I think they're in the right for wanting a first round pick. And I'm sure Cleveland's going to look into it, but in the end, it's going to be too costly for them, and they could find more value elsewhere, like in the draft. But I think what Cleveland has done, I mean, it's not the volume of moves, but it's certainly the effectiveness of these moves that what makes it so good. And I think that's what's going to lead to moving Cleveland on. I mean, like you said, you have the cap room, you might as well use it. So they essentially bought a second round pick, which, hey, that's fine. And now it gives them 3 second-round picks in next year's draft. They have their own, they had Philly's, and now they have Houston's. So already they have 4 of the top 64 picks, which could very well end up being 4 of the top 50 or 55. So, right there, that just makes them a good move. And yeah, so I think we'll move Cleveland on.
Sounds good to me. Yeah, and Bitonio will almost surely play left guard again, and Zeitler is a right guard. He was with Cincinnati. So,
Yeah.
as far as your question on that one, I
Exactly.
think those will be penned in. But that's going to be a crazy good line. Like, I just can't wait to see how that unit works next year. I just think that's going to be really fun and just a clinic as far as the trench play for that for the Browns, especially with Myles Garrett on the other side. Like, that's awesome.
It's going to be fun. I think they're really going to surprise a lot of people. But well, those that really haven't watched, they're going to be the ones that'll be surprised. If you sit and pay attention this off season, you're going to start to see it develop, and you'll be like, well, we kind of saw this coming. And every one of us will be like, yep, here it comes. And the other side of the coin will be like, wow, the Browns really? Like, 6 wins, 7 wins? Are you nuts? Well, this is why.
Yeah.
So that brings us to, and yeah, we obviously haven't had any upsets, but I think you can definitely make the case that outside of New England, these two have had the best off season so far. Now we'll put them together and decide who has been the best outside of New England. And both of these teams obviously have vastly improved their rosters in such a short amount of time. You know, both are, I think the Jags are more in a win now mode. The Browns are still kind of rebuilding, but still definitely moving toward being in that rebuilding and being in that competitive stage. And they were very competitive throughout the season last year. You know, it feels like both of these teams have taken a position group and really improved it. Cleveland at the offensive line, Jacksonville at the secondary. And then Jacksonville, you know, with the Calais Campbell, that adds a little bit on the defensive line. Cleveland, you know, they may not have, like, really improved elsewhere so far, but just the fact that they bring in two outstanding offensive linemen to really make that position group a force is what's really making them, you know, be in this position right now. This is a coin flip right now. I think both teams on paper have turned themselves into really good rosters. And then going forward, obviously, they're still in very good position. The Browns, of course, have two of the top 12 picks. Jags are sitting with the fourth pick. Yeah, but now there's a lot of people starting to mock O.J. Howard to the Jaguars. You know, as we're talking, like, you know, in the future, come up in the draft. So,
yeah,
I don't know. It's, what do you think here?
Yeah, I mean, it's you know, you're right though. This sets up into the draft, and I think that when you look at this in the big picture, you know, the Jaguars still have, I think, a quarterback that doesn't really throw the ball well, and so it's hard for their offseason to be that great without replacing or, you know, somehow massively improving Blake Bortles. And so for me, because of the plan for the Browns, which is to acquire their franchise quarterback in this draft, whether it be a draft or trade, which I'm like 99% sure is going to be draft. I don't think the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff. I think that's mostly media created. But they're going to walk away from this draft with their quarterback of the future. And to me, they've set up that quarterback as well as possible. And that quarterback may not even be as good as Blake Bortles. But I think when you look at the scope of their moves, I think it's going to be more impactful than what the Jaguars did overall. I mean, the Jaguars still don't really have an edge rusher. Campbell's kind of like a mixed player. I mean, he and Malik Jackson are going to be great together. But it's not like they have, like, they have Yannick Ngakoue, like, however you say the last name, but Ngakoue. And Ngakoue is really good, but Dante Fowler's not, and the guys they have behind him aren't. So it's, you know, it's still like, they still didn't face their biggest holes. And so that to me is a concern. And in fairness to them, they didn't really have the opportunity. It's not like you could have just dumped Blake Bortles this offseason for nothing and then improved. I mean, they could draft someone at four, I guess, but realistically that wasn't going to happen. They're going to give him one more year and then they'll probably decide what they want to do with him. Because if he shows out like he did last year again, I think they'll probably just add competition to that room and look to move on. But yeah, the Jaguars had a great free agency. I just think the Browns were a little bit better. As much as I love Bouye and Campbell and Church was a solid pickup, the Browns hit two home runs with Treader and Zeitler, and Zeitler's going to be he's a fantastic guard. And so,
yep,
especially on a five-year deal at 27, that he's going to probably see, if not every season of that contract, 4 years of it. You know, Campbell, he might see maybe a third year in his contract. I also wouldn't be shocked if the Jaguars had to cut him in 2 years either, you know, just because of age or whatever. So, yeah, and I hope that doesn't happen, but I do think you kind of have to look at that and say, you know, I think the Jaguars did a little bit more of just a pure talent grab as opposed to the Browns, which seem to have a little bit more of a plan, which is shocking to say, by the way.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there, bud. I think Cleveland slightly takes the cake here. again, for reasons that I talked about in the previous matchup, you know, building the offensive line, which it wasn't really one of their big deficiencies, but boy, has it become a strength. You know, there's always room to make improvements at different position groups and really make them a strength. We saw it with Dallas, and that's one of the reasons Dallas has become one of the top teams in the league, because their offensive line is so good. Well, now Cleveland's in that position with, like you said, four very good offensive linemen, and then whoever they throw at right tackle. And at that point, you know, you could always just play double teams with the right tackle in the tight end, you know, and just let whoever the quarterback is go with, say, two or three receivers and or a running back or something like that. So, and then getting that second round pick, you know, I think both now and in the future, Cleveland is really setting themselves up well to start competing again. So I think we're going to give the edge to Cleveland here and crown the Browns the non-Patriots champions of the first week of free agency. Because let's face it, like we said at the top of the show, even with how good Cleveland did, you can't top what New England's done so far. But other than that, absolutely, Cleveland, I think, has done very well for themselves in this first week.
Yeah, absolutely. And like I said, this all sets up for the draft. And it's just the Browns, obviously, with all those assets, just have a way of being able to make something work. I mean, if they want to move up from 12 for a quarterback, they've got so many picks now. They've got, you know, a couple second-round picks, extra picks that they can maneuver with and maybe move up to maybe like the sixth spot with the Jets, because I think the Jets would be interested in moving down. And I just think it makes so much sense for them and their moves. It's not like they had a whole flurry of moves, but this wasn't a deep free agency. So because it wasn't a deep free agency, you know, you had to make smart signings as opposed to, you know, a volume of signings. And that's not to say that the 49ers did anything wrong. I think they made the right move for their franchise. But had they come away with, like, Alshon and another key free agent, like Bouye, now then I think they would have probably been number one on my list. You know, I think those should have been players that they should have been interested in. I understand not spending on Bouye specifically, but Alshon, I think, should have been a guy that they were in on. And I think the Rams should have been in on prior. And I think that the Rams would have been in this discussion, too, by the way, had they signed a wide receiver. The fact that they only got Robert Woods and they lost Kenny Britt, I think that's a pretty big trade off. I really wish they would have been able to go out and acquire a guy like Terrell Pryor, because Andrew Whitworth was a terrific signing for them. It was a huge upgrade.
Yep.
I mean, Jared Goff is going to love that, because they really upgraded two spots when they did that. They upgraded both left tackle and then hopefully left guard, because Greg Robinson will slide inside to left guard, and that's more of his natural position. So I just wish they would have gotten a receiver and a corner too, but it wasn't a great corner market, so I understand.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought up the Rams too, because you know, they were another team that was, like you said, kind of discussed. But on the flip side, I think I got to mention this too, because we talked so much about Zeitler and you just brought up Andrew Whitworth, so I got to mention this too. What the heck are the Cincinnati Bengals doing?
Yeah.
They just sat and just watched their two best offensive linemen walk away. That's one of the most baffling things to me so far about the first week of free agency, is that the Bengals are pretty much sitting back and almost doing nothing. And, I don't know. It just blows my mind right now that not one but two of their top linemen are now gone. I mean, are they just that high on Cedric Boye and Fisher? Or I don't know. I can't really fathom this right now.
Yeah. Yeah, and on one hand, I can understand, because they've put the assets into replacing those players. You know, and then in that sense, yeah, I agree. But it's just tough, man. It's tough to say that it's a good decision to lose one of the elite left tackles in the NFL. Even if he's aging, even if you've invested a high pick into a guy behind him, at some point you do have to make that change. But this team had so much cap room, and they just continually decide to not spend it. You know, they only re-signed Drake Kirkpatrick, and that's fine. But it's too many big losses, and I feel bad for Bengals fans. I don't know how you stick with this team, to be honest, as a fan. I respect those that do, man, because it's just, to me, this is really bad ownership, and just the unwillingness to spend money on quality players year in and year out, it's unacceptable.
I mean, they have gone out and signed two tackles, really two of their former tackles. They brought back Eric Winston, and they brought back Andre Smith. I mean, not flashy signings by any stretch of the imagination, but you know, at least there's bodies there at the tackle position again. But still, like that's, and yeah, I mean, Andrew Whitworth is 35 years old, but I mean, even at the tackle, like left, or the position like left tackle, he's still playing well. It's like Jason Peters with the Eagles. He may be up there in age, but he's still playing at a very good level. You know, so why not? And you know you have a roster that's still pretty good enough to at least somewhat compete in that division. But now it's, you know, you, and it reminds me of when I was talking to Emory Hunt at the Senior Bowl. I think what he told me you might start to see come true. I think you're going to start to see a flip between Cleveland and Cincinnati in that division.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you saw that the Steelers were talking to Dante Hightower. Obviously, the Browns were aggressive. The Ravens go out and get Tony Jefferson, and they're in discussions, and they're the favorites to go get Morris Claiborne. Like, that's what you do when you have a championship window. You go get it. Like, and the Steelers, it's not like they're free agent heavy hitters. And the Ravens have had to sit out some free agency because of their cap situation the last few years, but you know that's still something that you know when you have the opportunity to add the right piece, you need to be aggressive and do it. So I agree. I just in that division especially, it's not like it's the AFC South where you can kind of get away with it, but. It's just a shame. I think it's just a shame because they've been so close, and I feel bad for guys like Marvin Lewis.
Yeah, absolutely, you know, so it was a bit of a nice run for the Bengals, but I think it's starting to come to a head a little bit. Speaking of coming to a head, I think that's what we'll do here. I think that's a good place to stop. I think this was a fun little project to kind of talk about some of the top teams and how they've done so far, kind of get us into the March Madness spirit a little bit. Like I said, the big tournament gets underway tomorrow. I mean, the tournament's already underway, but the real fun starts tomorrow with the round of 64. So, you know, likely by the time you guys are listening to this, the tournament will have already started. If you have your brackets filled out, good luck. May it not blow up on you on the first day like mine did last year with Michigan State, and the previous year before that with Iowa State. Which, oh, by the way, I have Iowa State going far again, so they might bite me again, or it could pay off dividends. You know, I'll go ahead. I'll state for the record here, my Final Four, I am Duke, Gonzaga, UCLA, and Iowa State, and I've got Duke over UCLA in the final. So if that happens, great. If not, then I'm the kiss of death, which has happened on more than one occasion. So we'll see what happens. Any final words for you, man?
I don't think so, man. I still don't know who I'm gonna pick. I'm leaning towards UCLA. Just gonna go with Lonzo Ball and put faith in his wonky looking jump shot and hope for the best. Even though I mean, obviously it's hard to pick the one winner, but I tend to go with the star studded team,
yep.
Or like the star led team, and it usually costs you pretty early. You lose early sometimes with those teams, but I'm gonna make that mistake again. And I'm going to probably do that bracket here once we get off. So hopefully it ends up well, man. But I'm proud of you, man. You did an awesome job on that.
Thank you.
And hopefully it bears the results in the tournament as it should.
Yeah, appreciate it, man. Yeah, so. Yeah, obviously it's always fun. And I'll be back at it next season. But now we're pretty much in full-on NFL mode. Excited to be back on. So got some good stuff. I think we're going to start hitting up the draft a little bit pretty soon here too, because you know, we've talked a lot about free agency. Now we'll get to the draft because we're only about a month and a half away, so it's an exciting time. I'm going to start gearing down here, so looking forward to having you guys join along for the ride. We appreciate it as always. So with that, we're going to head out. Remember to follow Ian Wharton at NFL Film Study, who did tweet out, by the way, that his draft guide is done.
Yep.
April 1st, I believe, right?
Yep, April 1st. And just basically finishing up the details now and just having him, you know, put everything into PDF format, making it all look pretty. But it'll be good to go here April 1st.
Very nice. So be on the lookout for that. So for Ian Wharton, I'm Bill Rossetti at Bill_Rossetti on Twitter. Thanks so much for listening to the Gridiron Graduates, everyone. And until next time, take care, my friends.